Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says a date has been set for Israel's invasion of Rafah.
It will happen. There is a date.
UN membership for Palestine.
We sincerely hope, since we change our status to an observer state, that the Security Council will elevate itself to implementing the global consensus on the two-state solution by admitting the state of Palestine for full membership.
And millions of people experienced the total solar eclipse in North America.
Oh my God, it was really amazing. Actually cried a little tear or two, a little, because it was like overwhelming.
Today is Tuesday, April 9th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Scott Walterman. There was a lot of news on Monday about Gaza and the Israeli-Hamas war. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said that a date has been set for Israel's invasion of Rafah.
This victory requires entry into Rafah and the elimination of the terrorist battalions there.
He did not disclose the date. While that announcement was being made, there was a new round of ceasefire talks in Cairo, but a Hamas official told the news service Reuters on Monday that no progress was made. Here's Reuters correspondent Olivia Chan with details.
The official, who asked not to be named, said, quote, "There is no change in the position of the occupation, and therefore there is nothing new in the Cairo talks." Israel and Hamas sent teams to Egypt on Sunday for another try at reaching a ceasefire in a deadly conflict that's now been going on for 6 months. U.S. CIA Director William Burns arrived on Saturday, with Qatar and Egypt also in attendance. Early on Monday, the Egyptian Al Qahira News had reported that all parties involved had agreed on basic points. The state-affiliated TV channel said the Hamas and Qatar delegations will return within 2 days to agree on the terms of a final agreement. This comes after Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu stressed again on Sunday his country would not agree to a ceasefire without the release of hostages. While Hamas repeated its demands, which include a permanent ceasefire, the full withdrawal of Israeli forces from Gaza, and a return of displaced people. Netanyahu said that despite growing international pressure, Israel would not give in to extreme demands from Gaza's Islamist rulers. Western countries have voiced outrage over what they see as an unacceptably high Palestinian civilian death toll and humanitarian crisis in Gaza, resulting from Israel's campaign to destroy Hamas. Netanyahu faces domestic pressure too, with weekly demonstrations in Tel Aviv and now Jerusalem as well. Protesters are pushing the government to make a deal to save the remaining hostages taken in the bloody October 7th attack.
Reuters correspondent Olivia Chan. At the United Nations, the president of the Security Council referred the Palestinian Authority's application to become a full member to the Committee on the Admission of New Members. Malta's UN Ambassador Vanessa Fraser.
Accordingly, unless I hear a proposal to the contrary, I shall refer to the Committee of Admissions of New Members the request that renewed consideration be given to the application of the observer state of Palestine during the month of April 2024. As I hear no objection, it is so decided.
Palestinian UN envoy Riyad Mansour.
We sincerely hope, after 12 years since we changed our status to an observer state, that the Security Council will elevate itself to implementing the global consensus on the two-state solution by admitting the state of Palestine for full membership.
Israel rejected the proposal. Here's Israel's UN ambassador, Gilad Erdan.
From even before the UN was established, the Arabs refused to accept the notion of a Jewish state in any borders. Here in 1947 and since. Each time a peace plan was tabled, the Palestinians' response was to reject it outright. To the Palestinians, the only solution is a solution where the Jewish state ceases to exist.
The two-state solution is something that we've talked about before. It's something we've heard many times since the latest conflict began on October 7th with the Hamas attack on Israel. Joining us now to talk about this in part two of our conversation about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is Lori Brand, Professor Emerita of Political Science and International Relations and Middle East Studies at the University of Southern California. The two-state solution, is that anywhere on the horizon?
I don't think so. I mean, the U.S. administration had stopped talking about it. I mean, it hadn't really been interested in this for some time. And I think there was a lot of lip service given to it to the extent that Palestinian issues were considered at all. And it's been revived because it seems like the among a set of extremely difficult possibilities, it perhaps seems like the least difficult. But I think, given the situation on the ground, both in the West Bank and in Gaza, also given the situation in Israel politically, given that the United States is in an election year, given the position that some major European states have taken in this war, I just don't. I don't see it. I don't. It's not just a matter of kind of political will from the outside, but it's also what are we looking at? The kind of changes that have taken place on the ground in the areas that were at least initially thought of as being the basis of the Palestinian part of the two-state solution, which is the Gaza Strip and the West Bank. And unfortunately, what we've seen since the Oslo Accords is the gradual, the sort of inexorable expropriation, continuing expropriation of land, continuing expansion of settlements, new settlements built, such that, there is the actual physical basis for a Palestinian state, something which there would be contiguous territory, which doesn't look like a piece of Swiss cheese, which is the way people used to refer to it. But I mean, even now, it would have too many holes to even hold together as a piece of Swiss cheese.
Well, and you have the problem of the settlements, too, right? There was a time when it looked like they were going to, I don't want to say go away, but reduce the settlements or stop building settlements. But that doesn't even seem to be on the table, right?
I mean, it used to be that in U.S. discourse, at least, and according to U.S. policy, that the settlements were viewed as an obstacle to peace. But increasingly, that sort of language dropped out of usage. And as a result, or not only as a result of that, but also as a result of the ideological inclinations of successive Israeli governments, we've had a continuing expansion of settlement, which makes the idea of a Palestinian state, of any sort of real form other than just kind of a name on paper, or perhaps a person who's allowed to sit in a seat at the United Nations, it makes it almost impossible. And so even before this war, people were increasingly talking about, all right, the two-state solution is dead. What does that mean for the future? And it seemed then that what that meant was what would be clearly a difficult and long-term struggle for Palestinian rights, equal Palestinian rights, under Israeli rule. Ultimately, perhaps, the end of the occupation, but some sort of equal Palestinian rights in some larger political entity. But the idea of a separate Palestinian state just seems, at this point, completely, off the table, except, in the minds of folks, I think, who want to, this becomes more of a distraction then rather than a serious discussion.
Hmm. Thank you so much for the time.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Lori Brand with the University of Southern California. Germany will make its case to the International Court of Justice on Tuesday, accused by Nicaragua of violating the Genocide Convention by supplying Israel with weapons.
Germany rejects the allegations made by Nicaragua today. Germany does not and never did violate the Genocide Convention nor international humanitarian law, neither directly nor indirectly.
The hearing on Monday The first, in a request by Nicaragua for the ICJ to order Germany to halt military arms exports to Israel and resume its funding of UN Palestinian refugee agency UNRWA, attracted a small pro-Palestinian protest.
We are here today because we hope that way more other countries are being dragged to court for sending weapons and money and other support to the Zionist state.
Germany has been one of Israel's staunchest allies since the October 7th attacks by Hamas militants. Hamas is a U.S.-designated terrorist group. We're following these other stories from around the world. Colombia's capital, Bogota, will start rationing water this week to alleviate droughts wrought by the El Niño weather pattern, which has exacerbated the country's dry season and caused reservoir levels to fall. Haitian leaders have finalized a deal for a temporary government to steer the nation out of gang-fueled chaos. The details must first be approved by the outgoing authorities. The Vatican has declared that gender-affirming surgeries and surrogacy are grave violations of human dignity. A new document from the Doctrine Office puts them on par with abortion and euthanasia as practices that violate God's plan for human life. In its most eagerly anticipated section, the Vatican flat out rejected gender theory or the idea that one's gender can be changed. In our continuing coverage of the 2024 U.S. presidential election, Republican candidate Donald Trump says laws against abortion should continue to be made by each state. That position goes against some of his supporters who want a nationwide abortion ban. VOA correspondent Scott Stearns has our story.
Abortion as a divisive issue in this presidential election gained new momentum last week, with Florida's high court approving a law banning abortions in the state after 6 weeks. That brought renewed questions for presumptive Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump about whether he supports prominent members of his party who want a nationwide abortion ban. On his social media site Monday, Trump said each state should decide on its own.
Many states will be different. Many will have a different number of weeks, or some will have more conservative than others, and that's what they will be. At the end of the day, this is all about the will of the people.
States have those rights following a 2022 Supreme Court decision that overturned nearly 50 years of federal protections for abortions. In his video, Trump thanked six justices by name, including the three appointed by him, saying he is proudly the person responsible for ending federal abortion protections.
My view is now that we have abortion where everybody wanted it from a legal standpoint, the states will determine by vote or legislation or perhaps both, and whatever they decide must be the law of the land, in this case, the law of the state.
Joe Biden's been campaigning hard on reproductive rights, vowing to return federal abortion protections that were decided in the case Roe v. Wade.
Folks, if America sends me a Congress that are Democrats, I promise you, Kamala and I will restore Roe v. Wade as the law of the land again.
Biden's running mate and Vice President Kamala Harris is part of a campaign to link Trump to more extreme abortion views.
How dare these elected leaders believe they are in a better position to tell women what they need, to tell women what is in their best interest. We have to be a nation that trusts women.
Harris and Biden are focusing on reproductive rights, as abortion has been a losing political issue for Republicans since the Supreme Court decision, with two high-profile losses in referendums in Ohio and Kansas. For this election, Trump appeared to urge his followers to recognize the political vulnerabilities of alienating moderates on abortion.
You must follow your heart on this issue, but remember, you must also win elections to restore our culture and, in fact, to save our country, which is currently, and very sadly, a nation in decline.
The head of one of America's biggest anti-abortion groups said Monday she was deeply disappointed by Trump's failure to back a nationwide ban, but said the group will still back Trump against Biden. Issues of reproductive rights in this presidential election will also be fueled by a coming Supreme Court decision on whether to tighten restrictions on access to the drug used to start most medication abortions. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
From Germany to Portugal to Belgium, mainstream politicians are joining TikTok, wary of ceding that ground to fringe parties who've been particularly successful at using the short video format to reach young voters. Here's Reuters correspondent Sean Hogan.
Forget the podium and the campaign trail. Ahead of the European elections in June, politicians are increasingly turning to one platform, TikTok. Many have calculated that the need to reach younger voters outweighs security concerns surrounding the Chinese-owned social media platform. French President Emmanuel Macron joined TikTok in 2020 and now boasts 4 million followers. Irish Prime Minister-in-waiting Simon Harris is another early adopter of TikTok. In Germany, reaching young voters is particularly important, as 16-year-olds can vote in the European elections. Health Minister Karl Lauterbach became the country's first minister to open an account in March.
Revolution by TikTok.
His boss, German Chancellor Olaf Scholz, soon followed suit. Among German parties, the far-right Alternative for Germany, or AfD, dominates TikTok. Its top candidate, Maximilian Krah, has more than 40,000 followers.
Echte Männer sind rechts. Echte Männer haben Ideale.
Digital media expert Johannes Hillier says it's part of the reason why mainstream politicians are now turning to TikTok.
All the other democratic parties are kind of panicking at the moment not to leave this important platform and the young demographic, the young voters.
TikTok has been under increasing scrutiny in the West. Some fear that user data from the app owned by Beijing-based company ByteDance could end up in the hands of the Chinese government. ByteDance has denied using its product for spying, while Beijing has also denied any such intention. In a bid to address the concerns, the company has launched a site to store European users' data in Dublin and hired a third-party security firm to monitor data flows. While Germany's security agencies have warned against using the app, TikTok is becoming harder to ignore. The European Union alone has 142 million users, 20 million of which are in Germany. Lauterbach says he can have reservations about TikTok, but also recognizes its effectiveness. To prevent data leaks, he bought a separate phone for TikTok use.
In an ideal world, probably German politicians wouldn't want to use TikTok, but since so many young people are using it in Germany, the decision is right, I think, to go there and use it. Otherwise, they will only receive political content from the extremist forces.
Reuters correspondent Sean Hogan. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Scott Walterman. U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen has wrapped up a visit to China, marked by a strong message for her hosts. She says Washington won't let cheap imports from the country kill jobs in American industry.
When the global market is flooded by artificially cheap Chinese products, the viability of American and other foreign firms is put into question. And we've seen this story before. Over a decade ago, massive PRC government support led to below-cost Chinese steel that flooded the global market and decimated industries across the world and in the United States.
Yellen says U.S. President Joe Biden is determined to avoid a repeat of the so-called China shock of the early 2000s, which saw a flood of cheap Chinese imports destroy about 2 million American manufacturing jobs. And finally, it was a pretty big deal here in the Americas. The first total solar eclipse to grace North America in 7 years made landfall in Mexico on Monday as millions of people gazed upward for the start of a celestial display at least partially visible across most of the continent. Reuters correspondent Emma Jaley reports.
For many, the rare event was moving.
A lot of emotion, a desire to embrace the family. We were cold. It was not warm. Thanks to the world and the universe.
Thousands gathered in the beachside resort town of Mazatlan, the first major viewing spot along this year's Path of Totality, from Mexico's Pacific coast through Texas and across 14 other states into eastern Canada.
Folks, enjoy the eclipse, but play it safe. Don't be silly.
U.S. President Joe Biden reminded social media followers about eye safety as millions of skywatchers gathered all over the U.S. for the celestial display. About 32 million people in the United States live within the Path of Totality, and many more were able to observe a partial solar eclipse. Crowds in Arlington, Texas cheered as the moon crept slowly but surely in front of the sun, briefly blocking out all but a brilliant halo of light or corona.
Oh my God, it was really amazing. It was an experience I've never felt before. When it got totally dark, I literally was like screaming the whole time. I actually cried a little tear or two, a little, because it was like overwhelming. It was an amazing experience.
Onlookers in Millerton, Oklahoma banged drums as the sky went dark. In Indianapolis, many gathered in the bleachers of the storied Indy 500 racetrack to take it in.
It was just insane.
We were just talking about how it kind of looks like a pierogi. Looks like a croissant.
In New York City, viewers were in awe and also possibly hungry as coverage reached only 90% totality, making the sun crescent-shaped. And eclipse enthusiasts in Niagara Falls in Ontario, Canada, broke a Guinness World Record for most people dressed like the sun. The period of totality lasted up to 4.5 minutes, depending on the observer's location, surpassing the one in 2017, which lasted upwards of 2 minutes and 42 seconds. According to NASA, solar eclipse totalities can range from 10 seconds to about 7.5 minutes.
Reuters correspondent Emma Jaley. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone at VOA, thank you so much for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Scott Walterman.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
April 15th marks the first anniversary of the civil war in Sudan, a bloody power struggle between the Sudanese Armed Forces, or SAF, and the Paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, or RSF. According to the United Nations, as of January 21st, 13,000 to 15,000 people had been killed, and another 33,000 were injured. Nearly a year since this crisis began, the situation in Sudan remains catastrophic, and it is only getting worse, said United States Permanent Representative to the UN, Linda Thomas-Greenfield.
Some 18 million Sudanese people face acute food insecurity. Children are starving, wasting, and dying. Far from their homes and their communities, millions of refugees are praying in overcrowded camps. Clean water is sparse. Measles, cholera, and other preventable diseases have spread. And then there are still those in Sudan, people in Darfur, who wake up not to the call of prayer, but to the sound of gunfire, of shelling, of cries for help.
We are in a crisis that is already fatal for many of the most vulnerable and could be getting dramatically worse in the coming weeks, said U.S. Special Envoy for Sudan, Tom Perriello.
This is a time for peace. This is a time for coming together and getting the Sudanese people back on the path that they began in 2019 with such creative means and courage to believe that they could build that beautiful democratic future for the people of Sudan. That's the future they want and deserve.
The Sudanese people are very united in what they want an end to this war. They want to build the core institutions of a democratic Sudan, said Special Envoy Perriello.
The Sudanese people are extremely united in what they want for their future. While there may be divisions on Twitter or other places, when it comes to the core issues here of a desire for peace immediately, for full humanitarian access, and for a return to the constitutional transition that helped unite and inspire the Sudanese people and more back in 2019, and the issue of a unified professional military,
These are issues of great consensus to the Sudanese people, and issues that can help bring stability to the region at a time that there are so many other destabilizing factors, says Special Envoy Perriello. In helping to elevate the voices and the unity of the Sudanese people, I think that can also help pave and shine a light on the path forward, in addition to raising the consequences for those actors who undermine the peace efforts.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.